Because well, what else can you do then? If you don't look at it the way I look at it, you're going to sit there miserable like I was, down in 15 points a night, fighting everybody, arguing with everybody, and lose everything, can't you? I know now that I can't fail in life because Reggie's with me everywhere I go, right?
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Hello, everyone. Welcome along to the Still Parents podcast, supported by Global's Make Some Noise. I'm Dan. I'm here, as ever, with Ryan and Matt from the Lily May Foundation. Buongiorno, Ryan.
Buenos dias.
Howdy doody, Matthew.
Bonjour, Daniel.
How are you?
I'm good, mate. You?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. How's the challenge going?
Yeah. Good, mate. Yeah.
No. What challenge?
Yeah. Your daily, has he been banging on about it much in the office?
No, I haven't.
My phone pings. Yeah. So I'm in about 15 different groups with Matt.
Looking at you.
Matt updates people, obviously, about his challenge,
I know what you're going to say.
I get 100 million messages because Matt obviously puts them in all the different groups.
Well, I'm in about five of those groups, and it's like you get the same set of 40 pictures five times.
Yeah, exactly.
You get me even more.
So I'm like, thanks, Matt.
If you are brand new to the podcast, Matt is doing a challenge, which is, joking aside, and we give him a lot of stick, but it's only because he's so bloody lovely, but he's doing this challenge.
I love you.
Which is every single day of 2026, Matt is running 10 kilometres in memory of Kelly, who would have been turning 10 this year. You can support through his Just Giving page, the details in the description. And also, while you're at it, follow Matt at The Karaoke Runner, because you, yes, you, can also get involved by suggesting a song that Matt can sing whilst on his travels.
Thank you for plugging stuff. I do appreciate it.
How's the body holding up?
At the moment, it's okay. Surprisingly okay.
Because you had to do it through all that mad snow, so you've probably done the hardest bit while your body's maybe at its least fatigued, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Which is good because I've literally only seen 3 days of light on my run so far, which psychologically is a little bit...
Yeah. Why? You're running in Norway.
What am I having to do?
You're setting off early, aren't you?
Early or late.
Well, I guess, yeah, we're still in that time of year where we don't get light till 8 in the morning and it's dark again by midday.
Yeah, so, but no, it's fine handling it at the moment. I did have a strange, it was interesting because for bereaved parents, this is one that will kind of, they might be able to resonate with. It's mad because on my early run the other morning, I was running up the main road, going into mile 4, and it was cold and dark, and I was questioning why I was doing it.
Yeah,
and genuinely, I could see, and I had, bear in mind, haven't seen her as a little girl. I could see Callie in front of me, holding a balloon, going, "Come on, Daddy, come on." Let's get.
Oh, wow.
Has he been on that LSD again?
Mate, Ryan, when you've done this many runs.
You got any for Ryan?
I promise you. But it's honestly, like, it's just.
How did that make you feel?
Well, I basically cried.
His eyes are welling up now.
Yeah, I was running up the road crying. But yeah, it was just. It was nuts. It was nuts. Yeah.
All the details in the description. So Matt's doing that. And our guest today, a returning guest, and I would like to welcome Dave White. How are you, big Dave?
Good, thank you, yeah.
And who, I'd say recently, but about 6 months ago now, was in our last charity boxing event, beaten up. I can't remember the name of the guy he beat up now, but it was brilliant.
Yeah, me and Joe, we had our final bout of the night, didn't we?
They had a roll on the floor.
Yeah.
Almost fell on top of me. That was one of the scariest moments of my life.
Yeah, well,
so, it wasn't right.
Dave. I was like, if this happens.
Were you the last fight of the night?
Yeah, it was.
Nah, Dave was good, man. It was good.
Like I said, the link for that episode is in the description. And it was a really interesting episode because the point of doing that is we get some of the bereaved parents in to fight against each other, 3 2-minute rounds in memories of their children. And in fact, we've got another one coming up towards the end of March.
Correct.
Reflecting back on it, because you were buzzing after you did the event. How are you feeling now? Because you had that, I think you were really in that zone of going to the gym. I think one time you went 4 times in a day and your other half, your missus was going, "Why are you going back to the gym again?" And you were just fully into it. How has that carried on?
Yeah, no, it hasn't. Me and Rod spoke about this as well. So it's continued to an extent, yeah. I'm just on a little 2-month hiatus at the minute. I had a bit of man flu and then, you know, we've just had a baby.
But,
so I've calmed it down a little bit. But like, yeah, like you say, when I was sort of, as we know, you know, you learned in the last podcast, I'm a bit all or nothing. So yeah, I was doing sort of 5 hours a day some days because I was like, you know, I've got this fight to go for. So yeah, as soon as the fight was over, I was sort of like, no, prawn cocktail crisps are back and, you know, cans of Red Bull. But
I forgot the Red Bull. Yeah. You know, Red Bull. Yeah.
I've only had one this morning, so a bit.
Okay.
What, pint? Not,
yeah, calm podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming back in. It's really good. It's really good to see you. And congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. I am tempted to ask you about your, how old's your newborn?
So Gigi's coming up to 5, she'll be 5 weeks old tomorrow.
Gigi, I like the name.
Yeah, Gigi Iris White, yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Lovely name.
I don't think I've ever met.
There's a commentator called Gigi Salmon. Yeah, I think it is on BBC. She does the tennis.
You up for saying how that name came about?
Yeah, so long story short, it's a little bit of a nod to Em's grandma.
Right.
It was sort of, suppose, what would you call it? A nickname of hers, you know, great grandma Gigi.
Oh, okay.
So I suppose it's just she's, you know, passed away, unfortunately, last year. So it's just a bit of a nod to her, I suppose. Right. And then the Iris part is because when we lost Reggie, that's what we're here to talk about. Everywhere that I went in the sort of month or two after losing Reggie, every time I got in the car, song by the Goo Goo Dolls, Iris, would come on.
I love that song.
What a song, Nally. Yeah, I love that song.
Every time I'd get in the car, that song came on. So that's why Gigi's middle name is Iris.
Isn't it mad? Wow. It is signs, isn't it?
Yeah. I promise you, you know, like, you could, I genuinely mean that. Every time I would get in the car, that song played.
You said the same.
You had that. Fireflies Owl City.
Fireflies Owl City, yeah. You would not believe your eyes if 10 million fireflies lit up the world as I fell. That was on the radio on the night she was born, because we had the radio on in the room, and that was when they used to do the top 40 on whatever radio station it was, and it was number one at the time. And every time I'd go to the cemetery, or you'd do something which was even remotely related to Lily, you get in the car and Owl City Fireflies. Yeah. So it's got nothing to do with the fact it was the most popular song at that time.
I was going
to
say,
but that's the weird thing, is because Goo Goo Dolls is how old?
Yeah,
and all of a sudden, like, I couldn't get away from it. It's like everywhere.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So, in,
about 30 years old.
Everyone and Dad live in Stoneleigh, a little village on the edge of Cobb.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got like a little village club. And sometimes, like, mainly, you know, they'll show the football or the darts.
Yeah.
Went in there randomly with and Dad had a pint of Guinness. And they were showing, like, I don't know, like MTV hits or something. And I was like, you know, like, because I could hear the first like three notes of the song. I'd be like, you know, it goes, dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And I was like, and even in there, they were playing the Goo Goo Dolls. And I was like, what? Like, could not get away from that song. Hence Gigi's middle name being Iris. You're the closest to heaven that I'll ever be. And I don't
want to go home. The Still Parents Podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
So you are here to discuss and talk about the loss of Reggie, which was just over two years ago.
Yeah, 2 years Christmas.
Now, with the episodes that we do in the past, when we get a guest on, we just ask them, and the same we'll ask for you, just to take us through the story in as much or as little detail as you wish. Ryan and Matt can jump in with some questions as well. If you can tell us and our listeners about the time leading up and the loss of Reggie.
Yeah. So, obviously December, you know, 2023, we'd already got Lottie. Lottie was sort of, you know, she would have been about 1.5-ish at that time. And just normal life. We had Christmas at my mum and dad's. Reggie was due in the February, so Em was obviously quite heavily pregnant.
Okay.
We had Christmas Day at my mum and dad's. Em's mom works for the NHS, so she had to work Christmas Day. So we'd made a little plan to have sort of a second Christmas on Boxing Day at their house. You know, just everything's normal, isn't it? You're living your normal daily life. We're having Christmas. It's sort of Lottie's second Christmas, but her first, if that makes sense, because obviously she was, you know, 6 months old her first Christmas.
Yeah.
She didn't know what was going on. Yeah, she was toddling about. And, it's Boxing Day. We're at Em's mom and dad's. Grandparents are there and family, and we're all having Christmas dinner again, you know, second Christmas and all that.
I was about to ask you, is it not leftovers then? It's a proper Christmas dinner.
So we had Christmas dinner at my mom and dad's. I think they'd had like a curry on Christmas Day, like her brother's.
Love a curry on Christmas Day.
Ryan does that every year.
Really?
Every year.
Yeah.
Did you have mutton last Christmas?
I had goat this Christmas. Okay, yeah. I had mutton last Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I've had pizza Christmas Day once, but that was a long time.
Bet you had Red Bull.
Yeah, no, no. I'll give it up on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Not Jesus' birthday.
Right. But,
everything was, you know, just like I said, it's a normal day, isn't it? And I suppose, you know, other bereaved parents will probably get the sort of the build up to this. And the strangest thing is, Em's mom and dad live in like a really, I'm going to say 17th like century cottage, right? So it's all stone floors and it's very like unchild friendly, yeah?
Right, okay.
No central heating and stuff like that, right? Yeah. You know, dad'll correct me, he's an antique dealer, so he'll be like, it's not 17th century, it's period. Anyway, but it's like an old cottage. Look, you go to their house, it's like going into a national trust. You don't feel like you can sit on anything or touch anything and you just have little rope barriers on it, right?
Is he like a stately home?
Yeah, well, he's an antique dealer, isn't he? Well, so, like, the house is like.
You can imagine them red ropes. Them red ropes.
When I know I'm.
There's a gift shop at the end.
Do you have to pay to go in?
Might as well. They have to pay me to go around.
Do you get an annual subscription?
Yeah. I know, obviously, I'm sort of diverting from the path here. Aren't I? But when I first got with them, there's like. I went around the house and I was a bit like, okay, look, obviously, you know, because I grew up in a two-bedroom, you know, like, new-build house on a lot of council estate, but as similar as, yeah, so I was like, okay, this is a bit weird to me. And her dad's got this monk statue by the fireplace, right? It's like, it's worth loads of money, apparently, but it's like, I don't know if it's out of a church or something, but like, this monk, and Em's obviously grown up around it, but, you know, to walk into this girl's house, you start seeing, you're like, why is there like a, why is Friar Tuxton by the fireplace?
Friar Tuxton?
Yeah. So, like, yeah, you can imagine I'm setting the scene. I'll get you a photo, lads, right? But so, honestly, it's a bald monk carved out of wood. It's probably got 4.5 foot tall, so it's like chest height to me. Sort of thing,
I just haven't heard Friar Tuck for ages.
Yeah, so, like, we're all there anyway, Christmas, right? Sorry, I'll go back to the...
no, that's great.
Yeah. We'd all had, like, party games, food, stuff like that, but Em's nan was there, sorry, you know. She's got one grandma, one nan, but her nan was there. And nan, you know, like a very, and getting involved.
Yeah,
and actually,
yeah.
You know, you're getting on a bit, sit down. Right?
Yeah.
Em's nan ended up having a fall, right? Oh. So she ended up banging her head on this stone floor. And when, luckily, Em's brother's partner, he's a nurse. So he's obviously tending to her and they're trying to get an ambulance. Now it's Boxing Day and they're like, look, an ambulance is going to be like 3 hours. So I'm like, listen, I've not had a drink. Yeah. Let's get her up. Let's get her in a car. We'll go to, I end up going to Warwick Hospital with Em's mom.
Yeah.
The obviously Em's brother's partner and the nan. So I'm sat at Warwick Hospital and I'm texting Em, you know, like, right, they're going to be seen soon. So they end up admitting Em's nan and she's banged her head and, you know, like, bleeding and stuff. You know, it's quite a nasty head injury.
Yeah.
So then we've come home and obviously gone back to Em's mom's and then we've sort of got Lottie ready and stuff and gone to our house. When we got to our house, Em's like, look, in all of this, like, chaos and everything, I don't really think I've felt like the baby move. And at this point, we don't know if we're having a boy or a girl, so we're just like, you know, and I was like, okay. So we've put Lottie to bed and Em's like, I think I'm going to ring, like, the hospital. And I said, okay. And we'd had a few sort of like, not scares, but you know, like, as you know, like new parents and stuff like that, if you have like any little bleeding or anything like that, or reduced movements, they call it, don't they? They say just come straight in. So, this has happened. And obviously Em's gone to the hospital. So I'm at home, Lottie's in bed. And, you know, we're still sort of getting updates on Em's nan. And as you do, you know, little things have happened throughout Lottie's pregnancy and, you know, Reggie's pregnancy. Yeah.
How many weeks, sorry, was...
So we were like 2 months away from...
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm not...
So in the third trimester.
Yeah. Right. Like, we're really far in at this point. And, so obviously Em goes to the hospital and I'm just sat at home thinking, okay, she'll be home soon. You know? We've had it happen a few times where they put you on the monitor and you wear those bands around your belly and you sort of watch it and stuff like that. And I suppose, I always feel guilty for this because I just thought, you know, not that she was sort of, you know, dramatising or anything. You know, I agree we're going to get a check, but, you know, I was sort of just like, in my head, I was like, so I went to bed and was like, well, Lottie's in bed, Em will be home soon. Not to go to sleep, but, you know, just sort of nothing on the telly.
Yeah, everything's
like,
gonna be fine,
I'll go sit in bed and when she gets home, you know. And then my phone rang and I answered. It was Em's number. I answered. I was like, hello, thinking she'd be like, I'm in the car, I'm on the way home, everything's good. And it was someone else's voice. And obviously then I was like, God. Right, okay. You know, that's the hit, isn't it? You answer the phone. Like you, anybody rings you that you know their number and you've got it saved, but it's not their voice. And I was like, hello? She was like, is this Dave? I was like, yeah. She was like, and I could hear Em screaming.
Oh my God.
I was like, right.
Wow.
Well, sorry, the coughing's running, but I was just going to say, you can hear me getting choked up, can't you? But look, you need to get to the hospital. I said, okay. I was like, well, you know, do you want to tell me a little bit more? I suppose you already know at that point, I'm thinking, well, something's not wrong.
Dave, can I just ask you real quick? You know, And I said, that might sound like an obvious question. You know, when someone answers the phone and you hear her screaming, what does that do to you? Like, can you remember that feeling?
Or yeah, so you, like so obviously the nurse then told me there's no heartbeat. So she must have put Emma on the phone and was like, you need to get, like, I was like, yeah, all right, I'm coming. But obviously, yeah, in that split second, yeah. I'll be honest, life paused, right? And maybe you can relate to it, maybe you can't. Because in that instant, although obviously I now knew Reggie's gone, and we didn't know obviously that it was a boy at that point, you know, so even though I'm referring to him as Reggie, we didn't know because we always sort of, you know, had it as a surprise. But straight away, I suppose, dad life continued. So I was like, well, I can't go to the hospital because Lottie's in bed. So straight away, I had to phone my mum and dad and be like, one of you needs to get here now. And I sort of said to him, I remember, I'm probably not a very emotional person, right? Although I'm about to burst into tears, so that probably sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? But I remember just saying to mum and dad, look, like, very blunt, I suppose. Listen, Em's at hospital. I can't remember what I'd have said. I think I actually said, look, like, the baby's gone. Like, you know, no heartbeat. I need someone here. I suppose it would have sounded very much the way I'm saying it now, you know. So I suppose Em probably had the worst way of finding out on her own in a hospital. She doesn't like hospitals anyway. And being told that. And then I had, obviously, you know, sort of a very blunt delivery of, you need to get here now. But then, and I remember though, so our bedroom, the way it was set up, like we had like a, almost like a dressing room to it. And I remember standing there, Lottie's fast asleep upstairs. I remember standing there and thinking to myself, well, what shall I wear? And I thought to myself, not, and don't, please don't misinterpret that as a, you know, sort of that, I was seeing it as some sort of, but you know, you just, I couldn't think straight. I was stood there and thinking like, well, am I going to be at the hospital for a while? Am I? And I remember, and I remember just, right, this probably does make me sound a bit of a soccer, like literally punching myself in the head, stood in the mirror, right? Like a real good dig, thinking, why the fuck are you trying to deliberate about what to wear? But it, and then like I said, it wasn't me thinking, oh, I want to look good or whatever. I was I put shorts on? Should I put trousers on? Do I wear a jump?
Do you think it's like a subliminal way of your brain maybe just trying to like shield you a bit from reality?
I couldn't think about anything. And then, Em had spoke, I phoned Em's mom, who obviously was at the hospital with her mom. They'd kept her in and sent Em's mom home. So Em's mom came straight to us then.
Was it the same hospital? Sorry.
Yeah, well, so Em was at Warwick Hospital and Nan had obviously been admitted. Her mom had worked there, but she'd obviously, so she managed to get to us before my parents did. And we funnily enough, we were just talking about this on a side topic, weren't we, Ron? I'd not long bought a Tesla and not that that's, you know, makes any difference to this, but I ran outside. And I'd blocked it in with Em's car. And I remember moving Em's car as much as I probably needed to be able to, you know, just in a rush. And I got in that car, put it in reverse, and I put my foot down, and I completely misjudged it, and I went reverse straight into the fence, our front fence. So. And I remember getting out and just thinking, right, and just like, not even, but, and just getting the car off the drive. And I remember I was driving through Kenilworth, hopefully there's no traffic officers. I was driving through Kenilworth, it's stupid. Like, I must be doing 120 mile an hour on Kenilworth High Street, right? Just didn't care, just needed to get there.
What time was this, Dave? This
probably like midnight. I was driving like an absolute loser. I don't know if you guys know Kenilworth, but it floods really badly. I remember flying through this flood in this electric car.
Oh, gotcha.
And I remember thinking, hold on in a minute, like, I'm going to die as well. Do you know what I mean? Thinking like, I know I need to, and I remember just telling myself, because at this point, I've got no music on, I'm just in my own thoughts, and I know what I'm getting there to, and I need to get there for him. But I remember coming to that flood and thinking, in a minute, I'm gonna crash this car, you know, like, and I'm no good to anyone. So yeah, I got to the hospital, and this bit, I've always said to him, it was just like a film, because I can't navigate Warwick Hospital, right? For as many times I've been there, and we're very fortunate to have had two children since Reggie and Lottie was delivered there, I still cannot work my way around that hospital, right? I have no clue. And they were doing building work, and so like, it's a bit like Harry Potter. One day there's a staircase there, and the next day it's a building site, right? And I'm laughing and joking, aren't I? But it's the only way I can get through this. And I remember dumping the car, just literally just, I don't even know if it was a car space. I remember just pulling up, running out. I don't know if the door was open, it was locked, and just finding like, I swear it was like a site entrance, and just running through this, you know, like, like sheet, like plastic sheets, and just being in this hospital. And bearing in mind, I'll admit this to you guys, I hate hospitals. Yeah, like I do not like hospitals. I always think they're going to harvest my organs or I'll be kept in there. I've probably watched too many horror films. Too young.
No, but it's a good point though. I don't know. I've never met anyone who goes, you know what? I love hospitals.
I can't do injections. I can't do I hate. I won't even go to doctors. Right. I'll just like it or lump it, that's it. And I remember just running down corridors, like looking at signs and thinking it's got to be, and like, somehow I ended up where I needed to be. Obviously went in there, just gave Emma a big cuddle and sort of, you know, I already knew what had happened. The nurse could obviously come and explain stuff.
So on the phone, sorry to come in, so they just didn't say what happened, they just told you to get there and then everything became
from
clear.
Memory, no, yeah. I think they did sort of say, you know, like, I can't remember if it was the midwife or Emma, but they sort of said, like, right, look, like, you need to get here, like, there's no heartbeat.
Oh, God.
And yeah, that was essentially that was it. Then, like, you know, it had happened and... they obviously told us, you know, what would happen next, and they sort of said, you know, like, you said to Emily, you're gonna have to give birth and stuff like that. And they sort of said, you know, like, you're gonna go home and then you're gonna come back. I think it was in 2 days' time, and that's when obviously everything will happen.
That's horrible,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah.
See, that's the bit as well. That, like, obviously, you can empathize. Yeah, with that, but I can't get to that because we didn't have that experience. But I can't imagine the drive home,
knowing that
Ryan, you spoke about this before about the feelings.
It doesn't seem right. No, it doesn't seem right.
Is it just surreal? Like, I don't know what.
I think you're in a bubble anyway at that point. It's surreal's a good way of explaining it. It weren't necessarily the evening when we went home. It was the next day, because ours was on a Friday evening. It was the next day where we were walking around Solihull in a complete and utter trance. But looking for, you know, a baby grow or different to dress her in, which they told us it was a girl. But then you still at that point thought, well, we better get a boy one as well, just in case. But it was a complete and utter.
So you're going baby clothes shopping.
It was a mind fuck.
Like, I can't. That's just.
So you went home for a couple of days.
I remember we drove home in, like, total silence. I feel like it was like the Wednesday night when this had happened. So obviously, we're at home, and then Em's mum, you know, mum and dad were at ours. I remember they sort of went home, and Em's mum stayed. Obviously, it's her daughter, isn't it? You know, you know, who do you need when something's wrong? Your mum, don't you? So, you know, Em's mum was around and stuff like that. And I remember just having, like, a really, like, obviously, we still had Lottie, do you know what I mean? It was like a handful of bundle of joy. So on the Thursday, I remember Em just obviously, you know, being in bed and we sort of trying to get her to.
And what's at the time? Sorry, about one and a half, you said about?
Yeah, probably about that, yeah. So, Lottie's an April baby, so yeah, we're talking December. She's what, just over one and a half. And then, like, the next day, you know, how do you, you're sort of packing your stuff to go to hospital, knowing that you're not coming home with your baby. I remember sort of, Emma said that she wanted her mum, and I said, yeah, look, so her mum was coming with us. So I took Lottie in the morning to my mum and dad's and sort of was like, you know, This is your part of the job, if you like, you know, Lottie's going to stay here. And at that point, she wasn't really having sleepover, so weird to her as well, you know, to, like, take your child and leave her somewhere where that's not the norm. And then we came home and I sort of, like, told him, like, you know, are you ready? Have you got your stuff together? And going to the hospital. And to this day, like, so they put us in, like, bearing in mind, like, this is a little plug for Warwick Hospital. They're the most amazing people. Looked after us better than I could ever expect or wish for.
I'm glad you said that, because obviously they get a lot of stick as well, don't they? The hospitals and the NHS.
Yeah. Listen, right, the NHS, yeah, like, all politics aside and that, right, what they did for us, right, I can't talk about any of our six cancelled operations, right, I'm not here for that. Midwives, like, in my eyes, right, are on a par with, you know, like, angels, right?
Yeah.
They've literally, I've said to them, I couldn't be that nice to people repeatedly, I don't think, right?
Just not enough of them, is
it? No. To the point as well, where, you know, again, I'm sort of diverting, of course, aren't I? While we were in hospital being induced to have Gigi just in December, there was another guy in another bay getting all irate with the midwife because she couldn't tell him how long until his baby was going to be arrived. So he didn't know if he could go home to sleep. And Emma had to literally physically, bear in mind, heavily pregnant, grab me and be like, do not go into that cubicle and strangle that guy. Right? Because I was like, is this guy for real?
Yeah.
Like, listen.
And the fact that it's almost, it's not fair, is it? The fact that you have to hear that same day that you're...
Oh, no, sorry. No, Dan, this was with Gigi just this was. When we were in hospital...
Sorry, my bad.
No. Oh, I mean, mate, if that had happened, I think when Reggie, I think...
You'd have been in the cubicle. But even
in that scenario then, but still, just that, it's that...
This guy was just like...
How can you answer a question like that?
Yeah, he was like, well, how long do you think it would be? She was like, I don't know, it could be like 10 minutes, it could be like 10 hours. And he's like, well, I want to work out if I can go home for a sleep. And I literally went to stand up and I was like, sit down, don't start.
Dave Burr saying, I'll put you to sleep, mate.
Yeah, I was like, mate, like, I said to him, I was like, these, you know, like, they weren't magic. Like, I can't, honestly, like, and we'll get to something a little bit later, but I'll tell you, there's one midwife, and I'll tell you, I said to him, if I ever win the lottery, I will just go to him, like, what do you want? Like, where do you want to live? What do you want? Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we went in, obviously, and we got put in a room we got put in this side room, and like, I can never sit in that room ever again though. Does that make sense? It was perfect for what we needed at that time. But multiple times when we've had to nip him for some checks or anything like that, it's on Em's notes, like, do not put them in that room. Because I said to Em, once that door closed and we left, like, I could never step foot in that room again, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's sort of where we left Reggie, and that's where that happened.
Yeah.
But so that was obviously how the sort of the build up happened, and then we didn't know at this point we were having a boy or a girl. So obviously we were there then on the Friday, and Em delivered. We were told it was a boy. And I suppose I want to say like a mixture of emotions, but I'll be honest at that point, I don't think many bereaved, I don't really remember much. I think I was just too worried about Em and how she was. So I feel a bit detached from the whole process, if you like, you know, just more just worried about her and proud, I suppose, you know, she's going through this. But then they took Reggie, they obviously said, you know, you've had a little boy. And we'd already sort of agreed, you know, sort of names in principle, if you like, prior to, you know, during the pregnancy. So they then took Reggie off next door to a room, sort of, you know, like clean. And I went through and was like, look, I suppose, I don't know if, the only thing I could do at this point was like, look, I'm going to dress him and I'm going to take charge of that. Because normally that would be Em. Yeah. Obviously she couldn't. So I was like, I'm going to go and do that.
Yeah.
Sorry, bit of a...
Take your time.
See, I was the polar opposite. Right. I was petrified to hold her. Absolutely petrified.
Yeah.
And it was that day where I experienced a newfound respect, not just for Amy, my wife at that time, but women in general that have to deliver dead babies, or women in general that go through labour. Because I tell you something, I learned a lot on that day. And I think we've all had jokes where we've made sexist jokes and things like that. Because that was what, I mean, we're going back to 2010, it was pretty much the norm then.
Yeah.
But I tell you something, I learned some stuff that day that changed me as a person towards the respect that grew for Amy. But going back to that, where you were saying that you...
Yeah.
Took it upon yourself.
I said, look,
dress him.
This is something I have to do. Like, I'm not having a stranger. And again, I'm not, as I've said, you know, I've got nothing but respect for them midwives and I can't thank them enough. But I was like, this is a job for Reggie's dad.
Mm.
So, and even that, what you're saying there, Ryan, about like respect and stuff like that, right? So the midwife who delivered Reggie was called Emily, right? And she probably never listened to this, right? But like, as close to, I probably love her as much as I love my Emily, right? In the fact of what she's done for our family. But to look at her, I was like a bit like, and again, perceived perceptions, right? Yeah. I looked at her and was like, you look like you've literally just come out of school. She's like, so petite and dainty and small and right. But I tell you, what a woman, right? Mm. She delivered Reggie. And how horrible is that to do as well? We had to have to go through that. But then when we've had Poppy May since, right? So obviously I've been blessed with two beautiful daughters after
Poppy
Reggie.
May is the rainbow baby.
Yeah, so we've had Poppy May.
How old is she now?
So she turned one in November, so she's like 13, 14 months.
Yeah.
But when we went into Warwick Hospital to have Poppy May...
Sorry, so you got 13-month-old and one-month-old at them. Sorry.
Wow. Oh, yeah. At home we've got three girls, so I've got Lottie who's like three turning 13. Then I've got Poppy May who's obviously like 13 months. And and then obviously we've got Gigi now. Yeah, but when we went in, you know, to give birth to Poppy, bearing in mind, obviously, you know, everything's so raw, everything's so crazy.
Yeah.
And then I'd had her induction, and like I said, we'd had like, we'd been through their Rainbow Baby Clinic with the consultant, and like I said, I will never be able to knock, right? They've done so much for us. As Em sort of started going into labour, the midwife who'd looked after us all day was like, look, I've got to go home. And we were like, okay, obviously you form a connection with midwives, don't you? They've been with you, you know, and whether they looked after us, you know, more so because of what we've been through. But she went off to her like supervisors, like a sister or a matron, and said, look, I know I was late for work today. Let me stay over and make the hours up because I want to stay with this family.
Oh, wow.
And they'd said, like, look, you can't, or whatever. Then she come back and said, like, I need to have a chat with you. He was like, what's up? She's like, I want to be the person to discuss it with you. But Emily's about to come on to shift, who obviously delivered Reggie.
Wow.
We were like, okay. She was like, I want to know, do you want it to be her? She doesn't come anywhere near you. It's too raw. We were like, right. And she was like, or do you want her as your midwife?
And I bet until he'd been asked that question, that's not something he'd even consider.
No, like, we'd never even, again, like I said, right, I've got so much respect for this woman, this lady, right, this midwife.
I love the fact that they're checking with you on that, though, because that could have been so insensitive.
But, yeah, not a thing that we'd ever thought of, do you know what I mean? And I looked at Emma and was like, you know, what do you think? And Em looked at me and we said, look, can we just have a minute? And I looked at her, what do you think? And Em was like, I think it's the perfect full circle.
Yeah.
Like, she was amazing. Do you know what I mean? She was fantastic.
It's part of the link, isn't it?
So she comes in and obviously, you know, gave us both a hug, was like, look, you know, just asked us how we were. And, you know, I can't remember the exact conversation. Yeah. Bit of a blur, to be honest. But yeah, so she delivered Poppy, Poppy May. But I remember her saying to us, do you want some music on? Now, there was a Coldplay song. Emma will kill me. I hate Coldplay. There was a Coldplay
mate,
song,
join
right?
the club.
Emma's like, I want to listen to Coldplay. I was like, yep, sound like we'll put Coldplay on. So I put some music on the phone and that. And she looked at us, Emily didn't, said, what have you chosen Coldplay? Emma's like, because of this song, right? She's like, this
which song was it by them? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't remember. Is it that?
Matt, sing all the Coldplay songs.
Yes, Matt, how many Coldplay
and then
songs?
Dave will say stop when you hear the right one.
I'm sure it's that, is it, you know, The Sky Full of Stars?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It meant something to me. Like, Emma obviously heard it and was like, look, like, this really means something. So we put that on. But yeah, so Emily, like, the midwife, looks at me and Emily. It's confusing. Emily, the midwife, Emily, my partner. And she turned around and she goes, why do you want to listen to Coldplay? And I said, oh, I really like this song. Mm. Like, I think it's really. And she turned around and she goes, you know, after I delivered Reggie, I said, yeah. She said, I was New Year's Eve, I was sat at home with my partner, she said, and Coldplay had done like a New Year's Eve, like,
yeah,
you know, the BBC Coldplay.
Yeah.
She said, and I was sat there like just with my partner, just watching that, she said, and I couldn't stop thinking about Reggie and you guys.
How?
And I was like, okay, it's just weird, and you know, how
the way
happens.
The world works, isn't it? And we've said this plenty of times on this show. Yeah. It's just, there's something, whatever your beliefs and views on life, there's some just, some things just happen which make you go, okay,
you can't explain that, can you? So we were like, wow, you know.
Was this the first time he'd seen the midwife since Reggie as well?
Yeah, and like I said, you know, sounds bad for saying it, but hadn't given her a second thought since it had happened, do you know what I mean? And I suppose that's what, you know, look.
And you'd left quite the mark on her.
We're all sat here, aren't we, as bereaved parents, you know, talking about this. And I suppose these people see that more than we can ever imagine, don't they? I mean, you know, Ryan probably knows the stats, but think what it must, I remember sitting there thinking, like, how does she feel? You know, we've had the shittiest year of our lives, probably. Mm. And she's probably had to do this how many times since us. And
yeah.
So, yeah, we had that conversation.
It does make you wonder, doesn't it, how many times a year would an average midwife go through a situation like that?
You know, as I said to you, I think it was my perception anyway, but, you know, she looked like she just rocked out of college. And I'm not knocking her, right? Amazing midwife, right? But, you know, I remember sitting there thinking, like, how do you cope with that?
Yeah.
So, and then since then, obviously, we've just had Gigi. She's just over a month old. And then we rocked up for our induction and Emily walked on the ward and was like, oh, not you guys again. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, she's sort of like part and parcel of our family now. Sort of facing it, because if you were to look at, I mean, somebody works out their rota. How has it worked out on the days that we've then landed in there on that shift at that time? Meant to be,
I mean, lots of parents, like, arrange for their bereavement midwife to be available if they go for induction or if they go for cesarean and stuff like that, which is what we had with Freddie, who's our rainbow after Lily. But we actually had the same midwife who delivered, no, didn't deliver. She was the midwife after Alfie was delivered by cesarean back in 2006, and then had the same midwife deliver Lily. I've just been sitting here thinking, I can't remember her bloody name, but I know as soon as I hear her name, it'd bring it back to me. But I know exactly who she was. But yeah, we had our bereavement midwife with us for Freddie, and then we were at a completely different hospital for the two girls. But yeah, you get some parents who exactly like that, story, where it's...
When you tell most people, right, I'm a strong believer in this, and I'll talk about this during the podcast, and, you know, things that have happened, people say to me, oh, coincidence, and I say, you know what, when you've been through what we've been through, coincidence doesn't exist anymore.
No, yeah, it
don't. Everything is a sign, like... You know, and some people say, I've said it. So, for example, my boss lost her brother and she'll see white feathers everywhere. And like some people, you know, go, oh, well, is it just that you didn't look for him before? It doesn't matter, does it? Like the fact that you see them, there are some robins. Like for me, right, I've got a tattoo now on my arm here of a robin. Yeah. And when we had lost Reggie, I remember sitting there. So me and Emma decided that we were just going to disappear anyway. Before we'd even known that we'd lost the baby, we'd said, you know what? It's been really intense Christmas, right? Can't be bothered with this for New Year's. Let's book something. So we'd booked a little caravan trip for literally just the New Year period, right? With me obviously intending to go back to work. With everything that had happened, I'd said to him, well, what do you want to do? It was a bit too soon. I said, well, listen, forget that. But we went to Cornwall. We went to a place called Mevagissey. It's where Em's been for all her childhood holidays and she sort of converted me to. Mevagissey.
Is that a word?
Sounds very Welsh.
It's like a little it's a little Cornish seaside town. There's like literally fishing boats in the harbour. There's one chippy, about four pubs, like in the middle of nowhere. And it's a one-way street with shops either side, right?
All
and
selling clotted cream.
Yeah. And a boots, right? And every one of them has got like paint on them from the cars because nobody can drive them. And then you do manage to get through and then there's a car, like a Sainsbury's delivery driver coming the other way and you're like, oh. So I just said to him, I was like, we're going, innit? I was like, let's just disappear. So we disappeared off to
you're glad you went?
To Cornwall. Yeah, it was like... I say it was amazing. Like, can you say that you just lost your son?
But, yeah.
You know, we just had quality time with Lottie. We went to a couple. We didn't do stuff that we wouldn't have done here, but we just didn't have to be with anybody.
Yeah.
We had dinner in like the pub every night. We went out to, you know, the beaches. We went to a couple of soft plays. Like, it was just nice to not have to
be in your own space.
Yeah. And not only that, nobody knew what had happened to us there.
Yeah.
So we didn't have anybody feeling sorry for us, right? We didn't have anybody like not knowing what to say. We just went there and was as normal as we wanted to be. Does that make sense?
100%.
Absolutely.
When we'd come back from the hospital after delivering Reggie, you know, like, what do you do? What do you want for dinner? Nobody wants to eat today. So I was like, right, I'm going to take it upon myself again as the dad. So I went to the chippy, went in there, and there's a little guy at the chippy by us, a little Greek guy, and I end up chatting to him, and I'm like, you all right? No, it's Christmas, you know, because I don't want to speak really, but... And he's like, oh, not really. My sister died. And I remember turning around to him going, oh, I just lost my son. And I remember coming home, said to him, so weird. It might have been the day after. I said to him, that's so weird because I haven't wanted to speak to anybody and I've just had a 10-minute conversation with the bloke in the chip shop.
That you barely know because immediately you are bonded by grief, aren't you?
Correct, yeah. So that happened. And I remember instantly, as soon as we got home, obviously, the first thing I did was like, right, I'm going to go and get Lottie from my mum and dad's. Em's mum stayed for a bit and then we'd got no food in the house. You know, it's Christmas and that, and it, you know. And I said, I'm going to go and do a food shop. He's like, no, I'll do it. I said, listen, I'm going to go and do the food shop. And I remember I got in my car and I drove to Waitrose in Solihull, right? I was just driving aimlessly. And if anybody was in Waitrose on that day, right, I apologise because I was just wandering around with a trolley and I don't...
Possibly banging into people knowing it.
Yeah. Oblivious, right? And I filled this trolley with God knows what. And I got to the till, right? And I looked at this trolley and it was overflowing, yeah? It was huge. I'd bought, flash speed mops. I was just, grabbing stuff, yeah? It's hilarious, honestly.
You know what, though? I'm sorry, right? Just to cut in there. That is the mind of a bereaved parent.
Yeah.
At least you didn't go to Aldi and buy a wheel for a wheelbarrow. Or one Wellington or something like
that. Yeah, I was just wandering around, right? And I remember, though, everything's party food for Christmas. Yeah, I got a flash speed because I was like, oh, we need one of them. And
how many did you get? Because the reason why I'm saying, because on your last appearance on this podcast, you talked to us about you suddenly went down you're the only person on the show who's ever mentioned the word Venus flytrap.
Yeah.
And then you ended up buying three of them.
Oh,
and we all asked you, at what point did you go, you know what, we need three, not just one. And this time it's flash.
Yeah, the flash was over. And this woman looked at me, right? This woman who worked in Waitrose. And I've sort of got in this queue and she looked at me and she said, yeah, come to the... Whether she could spot that something wasn't, you know... But she opened the till for me, right? Because... And I filled... You know the conveyor belt? I filled the conveyor belt, right? And there was still like half a trolley of stuff, right? And she's looking... And she said, should we start bagging something? I'm like, yeah, sir. And all I remember, right? I remember it comes to it and it was about 400 quid, this bill, right? And I remember just paying...
Wow.
And I don't even know what was there.
Did you buy any food? Or was it just cleaning stuff?
I remember everything was party food. I remember thinking, I don't want party
just
food.
Just came back with flash mops and cocktail sausages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember just putting it all in the car and coming home. And I remember him sort of saying, you know, how was that? And I said, look. And I remember just saying, look, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
Like, I've no idea. I don't know what I've bought. And the other thing was, I didn't get any carrier bags, so I bundled it, because I couldn't do it. I just bundled it all into the trolley.
Yeah.
And then must have spent 20 minutes, just launching stuff into the boot of my car. And then got home and was like, how do I get this out of the car? And I remember saying to Em, I'm just not with you. I was I remember saying, I just don't give a fuck.
To coin the phrase,
I said to her, I just don't care about anything anymore.
Yeah.
And then I remember her saying to me, well, you can't because we've got Lottie. And obviously, it does, I'm not going to lie, it gets easier.
Yeah.
You start getting your head around it. I mean, I was guilty of of turn into alcohol, probably.
Right.
Right. So, like, and when I say that, I didn't have a problem with alcohol. So, like, I'm not saying I was an alcoholic or anything like that, but I would, when I did have a drink, would drink to excess, because whether it meant I forgot or I numbed it. So, like, I'd do, like, 15, 16 pints of Guinness.
So, you'd either do nothing or lot.
Yeah, yeah, all, and yeah. That is my personality, all or nothing. So, like, since a recent thing is, I don't drink anymore now. I'm teetotal.
When's the last time you had a drink?
Before my boxing match, I think, or just after.
Oh, wow, congrats. That's brilliant. Yeah.
But like I said, don't for a second think that I'm saying that, like, I wasn't one of these people that would go to work and be trying to swig away in the toilet so I didn't really watch
it. Yeah, yeah.
It was more the fact that when I did have a drink, instead of having a couple, I'd drink to excess because it was a release, I suppose.
How long did that go on for?
So in the initial instance, I think, and that's the easiest thing though. Everyone's like, "Oh, do you want to come for a drink?" Like, no one knows how to deal with you do that, especially
Matt's nodding his
with
head,
nobody
yeah.
knowing. So everybody was like, let's take you for a few drinks and that. And they'd be like, yes, and. And like, don't get me wrong, I wasn't sitting there in the corner of the bar crying, but I'd just drink and drink and drink and drink. And when you had 16 pints of Guinness, the next day you feel rough, don't you? So like, you know, what's the first thing you do? You think, well, I'll have another one. So like, yeah, that was sort of one of my initial coping mechanisms that I raised. And to be honest, it was only really the training for the boxing that highlighted that to me. I gave it up because I wanted to lose weight and I wanted to be a bit sharper and stuff. But actually in giving it up, it highlighted to me that
you lost 3 stone, didn't you?
Three stone. Yeah,
I remember you saying
just,
that.
I think just under 3 stone it worked out,
For the boxing, yeah.
But yeah, it's the best thing I ever did. And there has been a couple of times where I've had the odd drink here or there, and I've realised that actually, when I have one, I have 15. Do you know what I mean? So,
was that something you just became more aware of? Or was that your style of when you have a drink anyway?
No,
I think that's quite a cultural thing with England, isn't it?
No, I think it was... everyone probably does it to an extent, but I think it was accelerated with what we've been through. The fact that by going through this, I think that I sort of developed, I suppose, a bad relationship with alcohol through that. Do you know what I mean?
And,
like I said, I'm not sitting here saying I'll turn into an alcoholic, but I think I realised that actually I was using different things to cope, if you like.
And you that's were wary what, of it.
Yeah, and that's what drove thing, me to, that's why I then came to Ryan and said, like, look, I'm doing the boxing. I've sort of, you know, not asked for any help until now, but actually I said, you know, like, you know, me and them, we're sort of not on the rocks, but you know, we're not in a great place. Like, I want to be a better dad now because obviously we'd got Poppy at this point. I was like, look, I've got 2 children.
Yeah.
I know I've been through what I've been through. Like, I think now is the time where I accepted that I need to talk to someone who understands how I feel, because at that point, I didn't have anybody that understood me or that understood what might be going on in my head, you know, since.
I was going to ask you about that actually in the role. That because an episode we did just recently, with link for it in the description, was about the role of family, and we've talked about family a little bit, but also the role that your friends play, whether they can relate, whether they don't know what to say, whether they tread around the issue, and the first time you can open up, and also the first time that you catch yourself even smiling or laughing. And then maybe feeling, Ryan said it on the last episode, actually, he's never spoke to a single person ever in anyone that he spoke to that hasn't felt guilty about laughing for the first time after the loss of their child. Can you remember what it was like or how you felt around your support network, as in your boys?
Yeah, so like, I'll be honest, right? I think I probably lost a lot of my friends, right? And that's not to say that they did that to me. I did it to them, right? I distanced myself from a lot of people who didn't understand, or you'd have someone who'd make a comment. I'd think, you ain't got a clue. You don't know me anymore. You can't. And I'm not saying rightly or wrongly, but, you know, I've made my decisions and I haven't fallen out with anybody. I've distanced myself from people to sort of protect my own peace, if you like. And the same, I'm not saying I've distanced myself from family, but I'm super close to my mum and dad. I love them to bits, right? But I'm not, like, emotionally open with them, right? That's just me as a person, yeah?
Yeah?
I would never go to my mum and dad and sort of, like, break down into tears and, like, that's not me, right? I've sort of, you know, forged my own path in life, done what I've done, and I see them every week, do you know what I mean? And, like, do anything for them, they'd do anything for me, yeah? So, but then, and then Em's mum and dad and sort of her brothers and stuff like that, I don't get their family, if that makes sense, right? And this isn't a knock at them. I'm saying, like, they've grown up very differently. I'm an only child. They've got 3 children, do you know what I mean? So it's a very different family unit.
I can feel people listening to this episode right now nodding. There'll be a lot, because I think that's just families for you, isn't it?
Yeah. So if Em's upset, she comes to me, or she wants her mum, or she can go and see one of her grandparents. Or if I'm upset, I'm me, right? I'm on my own, and I don't want people to feel sorry for me. I'm not saying that in a bad way. That's the way I've made myself, right?
And it can be quite a guy thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, just, I suppose.
I'll be all right.
As we said earlier, look, I'm 6'2" and 20 odd stone, right? I'm not some big meathead hard man.
Yeah.
But that is the way I... Like, you know, when something needs doing, some people are like, the first thing I do, don't get me wrong, DIY, yeah, I ring my dad, yeah? Right? But I'm saying, look, when we need something, I sort it. That's how I've grown up. If there's a problem, I fix it. That's how I'm the head of my family. What they need, I do.
The fixer.
So, yeah, for someone to then be the way I was and sort of, I suppose, lost, roaming, I mean, obviously, I've got my day job, and then I...
What is your day job? Sorry,
I work at Jaguar Land Rover.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, in sort of a logistics in our events side of the business. So I'm based literally 2 minutes down the road here at Fen End. I've been there sort of like 15, 16 years now, done a multitude of roles. And then I obviously run my own business on the side, buying and selling cars. So I threw myself headfirst into that. And you know what? The best thing I ever did, right, and also the worst, but... I ended up going and sort of securing premises, right, where I'd always traded from home, got myself this unit, painted it, filled it with cars, took on way more than I should have. But Em just left me to it. So, and I realised then that she was giving me what I needed. She could see that. So I left them at home for probably the first 2 months and just pushed on ahead, being like, right, I'm going to be the biggest car dealer. You know, thinking I was going to take on Evans Halshaw or something, right? And then that dwindled, like, again, that didn't.
But like you say, you are all or nothing, aren't you?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I can see this.
But also, he's in control of that.
Yeah.
So you're in control of it.
Yeah, I was just going there every day. And, you know, and we talked about your commute, didn't you? This unit was miles away on a farm, right? It used to take me like an hour to get there, an hour to get home. And I'd be there all times of the day till 2 a.m, painting it and, you know, doing all this. And then all of a sudden, I realised it's not giving me the dopamine that I need. And then the next day, I was like, right, so I'm going to sell all the cars and I'm done, like, handing me notice on the tenancy and we were finished, you know what I mean? And I was just like, I'm better off doing it from home and whatever.
Right.
And, you know, naturally, I drifted back. I finally went back to work and they were great. Like, they know what I'm like. So they just left me alone, in all honesty.
Oh, that's good.
They came and brought some flowers around. They said, look, if you need anything, but just tell us when you're ready and come back. So I threw myself back into work and again, you know, just sort of, but everything that I did was just a mask. I threw myself into the cars. I threw myself into work. And actually none of you, I went and got a membership at Nowcut Hall Golf Course, right, on the par 3. Years membership, I don't think I actually played there once. I went swimming once and that was it. So everything I did was just trying to find something to block out what we'd gone through. And I think actually what we needed to do was just hit it head on. So what we've now managed to do, and, you know, I think the boxing out with this and sitting down with Ryan, I realised that actually, yeah, what we went through is sad. And meeting other dads, you know, like Mark O'Hagan from the Boxing Lab, one of my best friends now.
He's
and
great.
And another dad, right? And I can say anything to him, and I mean anything, right? And it doesn't sound weird to him. Yeah. I can say to him, I heard someone say this yesterday, and I was going to stab him in the eye with a big biro. And he just laughs and goes, yeah, I get what you're saying. Do you know what I mean? Whereas if I said that to someone else, they'd be like, you're unhinged.
Yeah.
Probably am. So I've found people who understand.
I jump in there, Dave? Because I think that links back really well to when you were just talking about friends and how you said friends didn't know you. And I think that's what happens is... friends in that group of people that, like, because I've been quite open and said that I lost a lot of friends, and that was through my own choice as well. And that wasn't because they were nasty in any way, shape or form. It was because they were still treating me as the Ryan pre-loss of Lily and didn't then know me as the Ryan post-loss of Lily and what I needed. And they were never going to understand that. They were never going to understand it because they have no idea how it changes you as a person.
So there was Ryan pre-Lily.
There's Ryan pre and Ryan post.
And the only same person, email as well.
And the only person who has remained as, you know, my close best mate is my best mate, Matt, because he was the one that he came into hospital. He met Lily. He was the one on the end of the phone. Even though he'd never experienced it himself, he was the one that put himself into... an uncomfortable position for him because it would have been extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But he, without any questions asked, put himself in that position. That's friends.
He was trying to walk a mile in your shoes,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Exactly. That that's the friends. The friends that they'll still never understand it, but the ones that are prepared to give you the time of day. And that's like obviously what you're getting out of Marcus.
Yeah,
is the fact that you're on common ground.
I'm not saying my friends did anything wrong. But for example, right, one classic example is we'd all arranged to go to, like, we're all pretty much into cars and stuff like that. So we'd all arranged to meet at this little racetrack near Lichfield, right? So somebody had booked it for the day. It was like a birthday thing. And that was meant to be on the 29th of December. I remember sitting in the hospital waiting for Reggie to be born on that day on the 29th. Obviously lost him on the 27th, born on the 29th, thinking, well, all them twats are there. They don't even know what's happened to me. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Sort of thinking, and I remember holding, and again, it's not, it's just the fact that, but, you know, it's different levels of understanding. I've grown up a lot since losing Reggie. You know, I'm 35 years old now, but I probably, you know, I'm much older than that now in my sort of outlook and stuff. But one thing it did do was make me realise that, and this, I suppose, has helped me a lot, right, what I'm about to say. And it's sort of a, do you call it a mantra or God? I used to feel like we were really unlucky and sad. And I used to feel like, you know, why me and stuff like that. Now we've tried, both me and Emily have said it's more, how do you say this without sounding weird? But again, parents are listening now. We're lucky to have gone through what we've been through, right, to an extent. Em's got this feeling of saying that, right, that Reggie was never going to live. Okay, that it was just a vessel. Like, right. So she looks at him as like a soul, right? Is the only way I can explain it, yeah? So that people understand. And that the body was his vessel to get him here, right? And he's still with us. We see Reggie everywhere, right? Robins, I told you I've got a tattoo of a Robin. Yeah. When we went to Cornwall, we went to somewhere called, it was like some gardens, right? An old stately home. And they discovered these hidden gardens, right? I'll have to get the name, right? But we sat there, right? Probably 3-4 days after Reggie was born. So we're like devastated at this point. I sat on a bench with Lottie and a pram, and a robin landed on the bench next to me and just sat there looking at me. And I said to Em, like, what do you do? Like, it's there. Like, it's a sign. Like, yeah. You can't deny it, can you? And I promise you, Dan, everywhere we go, I will see a robin, right? And, you know, you might think, oh, okay, you just didn't look for him before. And like, I've literally almost been hit in the face by a robin flying past, like, and I'm like, yeah. And like, it's if mad, me and Em, if we ever have cross words, I promise you, if I storm off and go in my front garden, there will be a robin sat there staring at me, like, go and fucking apologise to my mom, right? I'm telling you, they are everywhere. And that's what I've learned. Reggie's with us. Like,
that's
his name's on my number plate, right? He's everywhere. We've seen it. We went to his...
That's beautiful in the most bittersweet, horrible way.
And we said, look, we feel like, as the family unit we are and the love we give to our children, maybe we were chosen for this soul. Do you know what I mean? Like, he was never going to exist as a person, but he's still with us. Honestly, mate, he's everywhere.
I love your outlook. And
bang on.
It's...
Because what else can you do then? If you don't look at it the way I look at it, you're going to sit there miserable like I was, down in 15 points tonight, fighting everybody, arguing with everybody, and lose everything, can't you? Mm. I know now that I can't fail in life because Reggie's with me everywhere I go, right? I used to say to Em, right, I used to gamble like mad when I was younger. I was earning £1,000 a week at Land Rover, right, at 21 years old, and would put most of that into a roulette machine and borrow £10 from my mum and dad to get fuel to get to work and blag them and say, oh, there was an error with payroll, right? I've been through a lot in my life and learned a lot, right? But I'd say to Em now, I never thought we was going to get a house because my credit score was non-existent, yeah? Mate, since losing Reggie, we've bought a house. We've put a ridiculous extension on it. My garden looks like something out of Love Island, right? I've got Reggie's name on my number plate, yeah? And like, I'm not bragging, right? I'm not showing off that. I'm saying, like, since having Reggie, I haven't made a bad decision. Does that make sense? Like, like he's guiding me every... I got a promotion at work. I've done the best I've ever done in my car sales business. Like, do you know what I mean? I've got everything and more I could ever wish for.
Just told you up 1 second on that, because this underlines the point I was trying to make. Because not everyone, and obviously I haven't been through this through a loss like you three guys have, but still, I've been around enough people, enough dads who have, and to see the differences in the ways that processing and reacting to it. And you do have a choice in how you process and react to it. But your way of, and all the things that you've just said, I'm going to bring Matt in a second because he was nodding, and I know he had a similar thought with Callie. And the difference in Matt's life as a horrible result of losing his child. But, and you've, like you said, the house, the Love Island garden, the promotion. I'm a big believer in law of attraction. And I think, I don't like people use the word manifest because it's pissing everywhere at the moment and it gets to me. But law of attraction is a thing. And you do bring it on yourself to a degree.
I walked around with a piece of citrine in my pocket for 6 months.
The piece of what?
Citrine, you know, a crystal.
Oh, so, right.
Em's found something literally just after Reggie, and there was a shop in Cornwall we had to go and find, and they sold crystals, and I ended up having one, and sort of I played it down to her and thought, oh, it's nonsense, but I kept this crystal. And then So, you know, Tommy Mallet, who was on The Only Way Is Essex, he ended up launching a trainer brand that had crystals in the bottom, right, called Citrine, the brand's called that. And he'd lost a baby around the same sort of time as us. And I remember, like, again, I'm all nothing, so I fixated on it. I carried this crystal everywhere. And they say that when you lose the crystal, it's because it's done its job. And I remember saying to him, when we finally completed on our mortgage and was about to get our keys, I was like, can't find my crystal anywhere. No. I've never found it to this day. So that's what I mean. Like, you know, it might just be me wishing for these things or making it work to my own agenda. But I promise you, like, and I know you said Matt was nodding. Yeah. I have achieved so much in that small space of time since I've, because I have to now. I have to show up every day. I've got someone to make proud. I've got Reggie looking down on me. And I've got three beautiful daughters as well. Do you know what I mean? But like, I said to him the other day, we were laughing about it. I said, like, it's like I can't fail. And everywhere I look, if I ever think about giving up, or, you know, going back to my old ways. Because at first, I was just miserable. I was like, I didn't know what was going on. Me and them would have probably split up, do you know what I mean? And actually, we're stronger than we've ever been. We've got everything we could ever wish for and more. And I said to her, it's just about turning that grief into motivation, isn't it? And that's sort of the message I said to Ron. That's what I'm here for the boxing for. I want to raise money. I want to put it out there. You know, I'm not going to mention any names, but I've sent somebody to Ryan who sadly, you know, has lost their child. Somebody who sits next to me every day at work and works for me, and they've just been through it. And I was straight away, like, I was like, look, listen, like, what you've been through is shit. I was like, there's no other word for it, shit. I can't say anything to you. I can't do anything for you. But go and speak to these people. Make sure that you tell people how you feel. I was like, don't bother coming back to work. I was like, don't, like, this happened in like October. I was like, mate, you're off until January. I was like, ring me in January. Tell me how you feel. I was like, go and do what you need to do. Take your daughter out. Go and do it. And he said to me, he was like, that's the best advice I've ever said. And that's what I now want to do, is project this image of positivity.
And you
and
do.
Say to people, like, look, you know, I didn't realise, I've spoke to countless people who I've worked with side by side. There's a guy who I met when I first joined Jaguar Land Rover in 2011, right? And I ended up bumping into him after like 15 years. We're both a bit fatter and a bit balder, right? And I remember him saying, oh, I've seen something about you doing some boxing, and I explained why. And he looked at me, he went, you know, I lost my daughter. I said, no. He said, she'd been 18 this year. He said, we went into hospital thinking we were going into labour, he said. All of a sudden, we thought my wife's waters had burst. It was loads of blood, he said. And when the placental abruption, I said, that's exactly what happened to us, Craig. But ours wasn't as, you know, sort of casualty as that. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you know, yeah. It was sort of all very behind the scenes. And he said, yeah. He said, she'd have been 18 this year. And I said, right. Wow. And he got nothing. He was back at work 2 days later. That was 18 years ago. So I've been trying to push and get like a network built at work, because I want to help dads now. I think what I didn't have, because I didn't know I needed it, now I want to be like to people, don't be a twat like I was. You know,
that's the title of this episode.
Yeah, don't be a twat, yeah. I said, you know, no, you know what? My favourite thing is, right, we're all in this club that nobody wants to be in, right, yeah? I know you're not in it, Dan, but you can be an honorary member. I'll let you, okay? I've coined it, Matt. I've called myself. I want to start the Sad Dads Club, right? But then I said, that's not the right way of talking, because I'm not sad. I've had that saying, my son died, and I'm saying I'm not sad. But I don't want to be a sad person moping around. So the Sad Dads Club don't really work now, does it? But you can't really call it the Happy Dads Club. But we're not, are we? We're all getting on with our lives. We're all doing something. Like, we're all remembering. And if you're not, right, look, if you are sat there listening to this now and you've lost a child, right, I'm not judging you, but if you are on the downward path, just open your eyes and look, the signs are there. We went to Reggie's grave for his first birthday and let a balloon off, right, a helium balloon, and I'd left it in the car overnight. So, you know, they've gone a bit like, they're not as full of helium anymore, are they? I remember it flew off, right, and it was barely moving.
It kind of just floats, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I remember saying to him, I'm going to go in that shop and kill that bloke. I'm going to wrap that string around his neck, yeah? And actually, right, it sort of floated off, and we did a little video in that, right? And we must have gone back to the church. We watched it go, by the way. Reggie's buried at Burke's, well, it's like 5 minutes from here, right?
Yeah.
Whether you've ever stood in that graveyard, you probably haven't, but we watched it go over all these trees, yeah? Like, go. It was gone. Went there 2-3 days later, and that silver foil balloon with a number one was stuck in a tree next to Reggie's grave, right? And I said to Em went, it's got to be a different... I said, how can it be a different balloon? And then she's like, but we what? And I've got a video on my phone of it going, like, you know, like, gone in the distance. You can't see it. I said, it's back, isn't it? Like, do you know what I mean?
Wow.
And I was just laughing, going, like, shit balloon, bloody bloke in the shop. But, like, that's what I'm saying. If you open your eyes, the signs are there, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I think you've got a beautiful soul, mate, and your honesty. And I think,
I think what you're saying, because of what I've been through, I'm not saying that was a bad
person. Someone's
going
to be listening to this episode. This will be the first episode that they've ever heard on every episode that we have. And I love the fact that you are the voice that they will be hearing.
And look, Dan, I wish I'd heard someone like me at the time, because do you know what, right? I am unique, right? Yeah. I'm this person that looks like they're going to rip your head off, but actually I'd give you a cuddle. I'm, you know, a bit of a Jack the Lad sort of geezer person, but then, you know, I'm a dad of three girls who gets dressed up as a princess every night before bed, right? Yeah. I could tell you every word to Moana 1 and 2, yeah? So that's what I'm saying. Like,
you bought the entire UK collection of flash mobs.
Yeah. Image isn't everything, is it? And that's what I'm saying. Like, exactly. I want people to know that, look, it doesn't matter what someone looks like. I told Ryan straight away, when I went to the boxing, I turned around to Ryan and said, look, I think I broke down to his and Matt, I need your help. Like, I'm on the edge here, yeah? And I turned around and said, the only problem I've got is, I think you're a bit of a knobhead. I said, I know you're a Villa fan. And like, but again, and I said to Ryan, I said, didn't I? I remember saying, I'm really sorry for what I'm about to tell you. I said, but I remember saying as well, look, I'll come for one session and I want you to tell me if you want me back, and I'll tell you if I want to come back. And now we're mates, aren't we? Do you know what I mean?
We touched on this briefly on your previous episode, wasn't it? Like a bit of that. When Ryan wasn't too sure if you were going to,
I said I didn't think you'd see it through.
Yeah.
That, I think that was the first time, because we obviously had to then push it back. We had to push the date back because of things that were out of our control. And I remember seeing you the first time and I thought, he won't see that through. And,
but likewise, I think when it come through that the new dates were announced, we were on that holiday in Turkey, where we'd found that we were having our surprise pregnancy, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I remember saying to Em, and I remember, I'm such a critical person, right? And that's what, it pushed me away from. I remember thinking, oh, look, the boxing's starting again. And I said, oh, I wonder if it'll even happen this time, Joe. Because that's my mindset at that point. Yeah. And I think we'd arranged a couple of times to do this podcast and it hadn't worked out. But my instinct is, oh, not bothered again. Oh, I've been pushed back. Whereas actually, I said to him, it happens for a reason. If we'd have done it in January, right? Yeah. No matter what Ryan says, I would have got to the night and I would have fought, right? Would I have done as well as I did, or would I have given it as much as I did now? Not a chance.
Yeah.
So I agree to an extent. But also knowing how stubborn I am, I would have got there because I wouldn't have let anyone get one over me and say, oh, you're fat. Do you know what I mean? But I said, everything does happen. It does sound cliched and corny, but everything does happen for a reason. We're doing this podcast today because I'm a different person to who I was 12 months ago. Because now I'm this ray of positivity, who wants to do good and wants to say to everybody, like, yes, it's shit what you've gone through. Nobody you ever meet, even another dad or another mom, won't understand how you feel in your entirety. But there's so many people out there that you probably don't even know have gone through this.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So if you do talk about it, like for example, right? Oh, you can see I'm covering tattoos, but I had Lottie's tattoo when she was born. So the first thing I did when Reggie was born, I had that done within a week, and all of Em's family almost had a heart attack. I walked in with a tattoo down. And then I went to the same guy, Guy, and said, I need Reggie's tattoo. And he'd done that.
Agreed.
And we gave Reggie mine, so everyone calls me Dave, not Dave. So Reggie's name is Reggie Dave White.
Right,
and loads of people used to say to me, oh, well, have you got your name tattooed on your hand? And at first, I used to do the, come here, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
Now I say to him, sit down, I'll tell you why. Because that's my son's name, he's not with us.
Yeah.
That's his middle name. And I sort of, it's almost like turning just around and educating people, isn't it? Now it's a topic.
It's people
where
judging,
I get to,
isn't it?
Yeah, but
one
now
plus
I
one
get,
equals four.
I get to talk about Reggie now and tell them, and, you know, it's a chance for me to sort of, you know, give them a bit of info and talk about my son, who probably doesn't, you know, he doesn't get in the limelight, does he? And, you know, the same in my boxing and stuff. There's a photo in the house that Em's little brother's girlfriend got me for Secret Santa of me. And I said to Em, I hate it because it's me walking out, right? Like, it's, you know.
Oh, right, okay.
And she said, what do you mean? I said, no, not for that. I said, I wish it was turned round, because everything I do is for Reggie. Yeah. And I wish I could see his name on the back of my vest rather than me. Do you know what I mean? Like, everything I don't do it for, you know, with my fundraiser. It's not for clout. It's not to be like, oh, Dave's great, he raised money. I just want to see Reggie's name in print, and I want to see that he's remembered by people, or he means to me, or he's done good. Do you know what I mean? Like, Christmas, what do you do at Christmas? I buy the kids loads of presents, right? We go overboard. Well, what do I do for Reggie? I can't do anything.
Yeah.
So I put some money into Lily May and hope that somebody else who's going through this shit time at Christmas gets their memory box and feels the same. You know, I sold an electrician a watch, right? And I made 500 quid, and then I felt bad because I thought it was a nice bloke. So I donated it to Lily May. And I thought, well, that cancels out the bad car.
Right. Okay.
And stitching up someone you know.
I love how your brain works.
Then he left all the lights hanging out my ceiling. I thought, I wish I'd kept that money. No, I not kept it from Lily May, but do you know what I mean? I shouldn't have felt bad now about fucking stiffing him on the watch. So, you know, that's what I say now.
Yeah.
I'm, you know.
Do you still have your, obviously, there'll be ups and downs. So do you still, have to sometimes like realign yourself. You have, might have a little dip, or you know, the front. Can it? is that still a thing?
Yeah, look, don't get me wrong, but what I think I've realised now is I can get myself out of the hole now. Whereas before, it could be quite a slippery slope.
Like I said,
I can pretty much, and you might say that people might disagree and say, "Oh, you're looking for things, or you're just clutching at straws." But I see the signs everywhere now. Mm. So sometimes, we're all going to have bad days, aren't we? I bet you, Ryan. I bet you. Yeah. You know, some days are better than others. I look now though and know that even if I am having a bad day, something will happen that I'll be like, right.
Do you know what you've just said there about you found ways of helping yourself now, and if people think X, Y, and Z. Amy's always now come up with this saying, which is let them think what they want to think. Let them do what they want to do. Who gives a shit? Let them walk a day in your shoes, and I can guarantee you they won't be thinking that again.
It's not worth your energy, is it?
I think I'm a big character, Arno, so I'm, you know, it's water off a duck's back to me. I don't, in the moment, I can act like I don't care, but it does eat at me afterwards. So yeah. I'm very analytical. I'll sit at home and go back over. I'll probably sit there now and try and remember everything I said in this podcast.
I think because you're so busy, isn't it? When you do find yourself, sorry to put in, but when you do find yourself in a bit of downtime, that's when you start processing and analysing everything, don't you?
If you spoke to my other half, Dan, I can't sit still, right? Last night, I'd had a hectic day, right? Doing this, doing that. And I was wandering around. And she went, what are you doing? I said, I can't not switch off. And she's like, yeah, how many Red Bulls have you had today? I said, no, not that. I said, like, I'm on edge. I said, like, I don't know. Like, she was like, want it? I said, I don't want it. And like, I couldn't, you know, and I'm sat there and she's watching the telly and I'm sat there and like, I tend to like, you know, like, tap my foot sort of thing, like my legs go, and she's like, that. And I'm like, I know, I can't. And she's like, I need to go and do something, you know. Mm. And that's the thing, yeah. I think
you've got to be moving.
I work.
Ryan's a bit like that.
Thing.
I am.
Yeah, Ryan's definitely. Honestly, I've never seen, all the times I've been coming here to the office, couple of years now, I've never seen Ryan sit in his chair for more than 15 minutes. Like, literally, I'll go out to the toilet, I'll come back and he's like painting the ceiling or like he's building a fence or something. I'm like, just sit down.
But I'm impulsive though.
Yeah.
At the same time, I was saying to Dave before we started the podcast, if I've got something on my mind that I need to do, like in here.
Yeah.
As soon as I thought, yeah, we need to redecorate this within 2 days, it's here and I'm doing it because it's...
Not only that, I came in early and Rom's like, come in here, and I've walked over to his desk and he's like, where can I get a floating shelf from? And I'm like, one of the women in there turned around and was like, oh, I need it today.
Yeah. Well, 48 hours ago, we were in this studio being taught how to... say hello in sign language, because we're going to be doing a bit of that on some future episodes, and also, you know, because we need to do that. And as soon as it is done, Ryan's there downloading about 8 different programs to splice the video together, like, and all that. It's just immediate. Yeah, he's editing it before it's even been filmed. I'm like, he can't even do it yet, don't exist.
Yeah.
But he's amazing. I think it's a really, really good quality to have, and it's something I wish I had more.
There's things, isn't there, that, like, I'm not saying stuff's ever going to replace, you know, the loss of Reggie, but there is things that I tend to like go head first into a project. Like, and I built an outdoor, well, I say I built, I got someone to build me an outdoor kitchen, right? So I was like, yes, and I like cooking on a barbecue and all that. So we had the bit in the garden where I was like, I don't know what to do. Next thing you know, Em's like, well, who are these blokes? And I've got bricklayers round and like, you know. And then the other day, Em was like, bearing in mind, we haven't got carpet in the upstairs in the extension yet. And Em's like, I really want carpet. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Sam. And I was like, you know, when we've saved a bit of money. And then like the next day, she's like, why is your mate Charlie here? Like, well, you know, because your dad's done a bit of work for him, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Mate Charlie runs a tree surgery business and like sort of all that stuff. Right. And then she's like, why is Charlie here with his van? And why are all the and like, I'm having a pergola built over my outdoor kitchen. She's like, so I've still not got fucking carpet and got floorboards upstairs. You've got like an outdoor, kitchen with a pergola. And I'm like, oh, it was already planned. It was already committed to.
You know what it is though, Dave? I'll be honest with you, right? I mean, I haven't really joked because I've just been fascinated. No, genuinely listening.
No, I haven't given you a chance.
It's not even that. It's not. I didn't want to because I'm like, I'm just listening. And we'd very, sometimes on this podcast, we join in and we talk and we get involved and stuff, and that's our job. But sometimes I'm just like, I'm just going to listen. And I genuinely mean this when I say that what you've done and how you've done it is just literally blow me away. And I mean that. I ain't saying it patronizing in any way, shape, or form. But what you've said about the kind of impulsiveness or this kind of thing or whatever, I look at it like this, right? I now, because life throws challenges. We know that, right? But I know that, and I've said this plenty of times, I know that I will handle whatever comes my way. I don't care what it is, right? whatever comes my way, I'll handle it because I handled that.
How can anything be a challenge or be too difficult or get you down or, you know, like, I don't know, I'm not self-employed, but you know, if you've got a VAT return yeah. or, you know, what's difficult about that? You stood there and held your, you know, your
you'll find
child.
A way.
Yeah, you're, or yeah. you've had to, you know, the hardest thing, you know, when somebody says to me, like, and somebody will be like, oh, I just don't know what to, I'll be like, listen, I've stood opposite my dad and lowered my son's coffin into the floor.
Right.
Nothing on this earth is difficult.
There we go. Rocking yeah? that.
Right?
Wow.
And I'm sorry. That's
blunt, mate, listen.
But that's why, right, going back to the friends thing, I don't have time for anybody who is going to sit and dwell and mope.
Yep.
Listen, yep. I've been to hell and I fucking climbed back out of there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, hot rock by hot rock, yeah. And I'm not perfect, I'm not. But I, only me, and, yeah. and that even sounds like I'm having a knock at M, but M couldn't help me, right? The person I am and how I am, I've had to drag myself back from there because I've got, well, at the time, a child, now three children, who rely on me. M doesn't work, I pay the bills, I put the roof over her head. Without me, the family doesn't work, right? So when you tell me, like, oh, I got a parking ticket today, oh, I'm not... Fucking pay it. It's 30 quid if you pay it in 7 days. If I want to visit my son, I have to go to a graveyard. Don't tell me life's difficult. And that's where people don't understand.
Yeah.
You probably do understand that because you sit in this room around people and you're surrounding. But I'm saying if you haven't lost a child, you
well,
don't
I get it. But it doesn't mean I understand
no.
it.
Yeah.
I tell you, we've got a friend who complains that she's had a hard week when she's done... I don't know, 10 hours worth of work in a week, and you're like, for fuck's sake, you ain't got a clue.
I felt bad moaning to Ryan on the phone. I think it was on Sunday because I'd had a flat tire and my fridge was bust.
So you're fucking... No, I'm joking.
Should have phoned me. I cleaned my garage out. I had a tire with a fridge out.
Yeah. All gone to Aldi. You'd have found one in the middle aisle.
I did, but they were selling welding hats instead. But they're both fixed now. And... I sometimes in my head going, well, I need to speak to Ryan. And I know because I get, you know, these two of my very close friends now myself. So just by natural course of conversation, I'll end up blurting out the shit that's frustrating me that day. And in my head, I'm going, I really shouldn't be saying this to these guys. But my other part of my head goes, well, hang on. Why shouldn't I still? It's still life.
Yeah,
and it's still my thoughts.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Everyone's got their own challenges, right?
Yeah. So I get it, but I don't understand it, but I see. And that's what I mean.
I think
you have to give out that
when,
tough love to people
yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah, I think when people have got, you know, like a really defeatist, like, it sounds like you just got on with
wallowing in it.
But when someone's there, like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, listen, I've heard this story 30 times.
Yeah.
A classic one, right? And, you know, Em's mum might listen to this, right? Me and Em's mum, we were driving to go strawberry picking once, right? I was driving the car, she was in, Lottie was in. And sadly, like, Em lost her auntie, right? And her auntie was sort of like the pillar of their family, right? At this point, she hasn't passed away, right? Well, the time I'm talking about. But like, and Em's grandma was on the sort of the decline at the time. And everyone was obviously really sad and, you know, and all that. And I remember we were driving down the A45, right? And I don't think it came out how I meant it to. And again, that's something I've had to work on, right?
Yeah.
But I remember I didn't think I was shouting, but it turned out I literally just screamed at her and was like, you lot don't know what you've got, right?
Yeah,
and
wow.
She'll listen to this. She listened to my boxing one. So look, Caroline, I love you to bits, but I want you to sort of get where that came from. You know, we've spoke about it afterwards, but I tried to put across that I felt people were almost mourning these people before they'd gone.
Mm.
And I said to them, if you want to talk about people needing leeway and needing support, look at us. Our son's gone. We never met him. We never got a chance to do anything. I never got to know his character or see what colour his hair was going to be or eyes going to be. Or if you, you know, I never got to see any of that.
Yeah.
And I say this to people now, I've had it happen at work. I say, listen, just make the most of every single minute. Yes, you've been told the terrible news that, you know, someone's going to pass away, but they're still here today.
Still here.
Mm. And I used to say to him, you know, when a granddad was sort of, you know, on his last legs, he said, let's go and see him.
Yeah.
This was before Reggie, but I was like, because they're still here, aren't they? And I think people have got...
Be in the moment, be in the moment, isn't it?
Oh, you know, unfortunately, we're all going to die.
Mm.
Every one of us in this room is going to die unless you know a secret. I don't, right?
Well, but Putin... I've talked to Donald Trump because apparently he knows. So, like, he's going to, like, so, yeah. So.
Oh, has he said that now?
Yeah,
has
he said he's found out or something. He's going to be able to repeat himself or something.
Of course
like
he has.
Like, yeah,
you've got to celebrate life while it's here, haven't you?
He's going to be able to repeat. He's going to clone himself.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Fuck me. say.
But no, but it,
you're imagine him, sorry. I would like actually to see him having a conversation with himself. Because that would be interesting.
He'd have an argument in an empty room.
If he met a clone of himself, he'd tariff him. I don't know how that would work.
No, he'd put a tariff on himself.
They'd tariff each other.
But no,
never before.
Sorry. No, Dave, I honestly just think it's the attitude you bring, but it's mad to hear your journey as well, how you've got to it.
Like, because I said, for example, with Em's mum, I ended up losing my shit with her, right? Admittedly, I didn't realise how far I'd gone with it, but it ruined that whole day strawberry picking. I probably really upset her. But my point was coming from love. It was saying, look, your sister's still there. You can go and visit her. You can go and have a chat with her. She's still your sister. And not only that, Em's grandma, I loved her to bits. I didn't grow up with much family, so I've never had grandparents. It's been a novelty to me. I love going to Em's grandma's because she used to have a fridge full of cans of full fat Coke, right? Yeah. I don't even know why full fat Coke's full fat. It's just Coke, isn't it? Everyone calls it full fat. But and I'd just sit there and just listen to her. She'd tell me, they were from Oldham. Her and her husband come here on a motorbike and sidecar on their honeymoon, and they found Kenilworth and they moved here 3-4 years later. Do you know what I mean? I used to think it's fascinating. Yeah. So I've never had that. Do you know what I mean? So I used to think it's fascinating. But even when she, I was she was in her 80s. You've had 80 years, that person. I got no time with Reggie. I cuddled him for 12 hours and then I had to say goodbye. I slipped £5 in his baby grum and thought, again, stupid thought. And what do you do? I was like, he needs a bit of money to take with him. I thought, what the fuck? So he's buried me.
I love that.
I've only got gratitude for you guys. I've managed to open up, talk a bit, and I'm happy with where I am at the minute. Yeah. I've found this new mentality, if you like, and I can
mentality, only mentality, vitality, all the tenities, man. You've got them.
Yeah, I just want to help people now. it's refreshing, isn't it? Because I was probably the most unapproachable, grumpy, miserable person, and I'm just not now. I walk down the road, just say morning to people. I think it's funny because, like I said, I'm massive, covered in tattoos. I've got an XL bully who I have to walk around with a muzzle, and I'm wandering around. Everyone's like, and I'm just like, hello, morning, hello, are you okay? And everyone's just looking at me like running away, and I'm like,
Friar Talk's happy today. is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to mention before we finish this episode? I've absolutely no doubt what's in my mind at all that we'll hear from you again at some point.
I think the only thing we want to get on record, right, is I want Matt to say live that he's going to sing the Goo Goo Dolls for me on one of his runs.
Absolutely. Yeah. Listen,
Matt won't sing it. He'll destroy it.
Dave, the carrier.
It'll never have the same meaning to me again, will it?
It's a loose version, but the voice. But mate.
Go on, give us a quick bash of the first line.
What is it? Starts, I'll give up forever to touch you. How's it going then?
That's uncanny, that is, I thought that was in the room.
There you go. See, there you go. It's exactly. Dave, no, honestly, are you on Instagram or anything? Just if you add me on there and then message me and remind me, and I'll practice it for you, and I'll absolutely do it. I had someone the other day message saying, because obviously I was running past houses at 6 o'clock in the morning singing, mate, at some point someone is going to be out there for you. And I'm like, it's fine. I'll just run away from him. It's fine. So, but I will do it for you. Absolutely. And I'll dedicate it to you and Reggie. Yeah, no problem, man. Absolutely fine.
Thank you, Dave.
No problem.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Matt. Cheers, Ryan. This is the Still Parents podcast, supported by Globals. Make some noise. All the details about all the episodes and anything that we have referenced in this episode is listed in the description underneath this and whatever platform you are listening on. And if you'd like to come on at some point, just reach out, download our app. You can follow us on our socials, which is Still Parents podcast, across social platforms. Best one's Instagram to get on involved in there. And that is your lot. Ryan, Matt, anything you want to add?
Yeah, just to direct the listeners to our last episode, which was around children's mental health. So the discussions that we had on the last podcast regarding Children's Mental Health Week and how that's linked to baby loss as well. So yeah, that's an episode that's just gone up and is something that is obviously very important to us as a charity.
Dave, look after that fine beard. Look after the family and look after all them flash mops. Yeah. How many did you buy out of interest?
I can't remember.
The whole shop.
You just know that you need stuff. I was still walking around.
I'll buy the lot.
Well, I was just Em uses them. Like I said, I was just in my own little world, just strolling around the shop. And I'd never been there before.
Walking out like that.
They're good to be
there. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Dave. All the best, mate.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone. We'll be back very, very soon.
See you guys.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.